Hello and welcome to the Ruby Ropes podcast. I'm your host, Darren Bramer. I am joined by panelist Charles Wood.
Hey, everybody.
And our special guest today is Sebastian Vilgosh.
Hi.
Sebastian, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully I pronounced your name close, at least relatively close to being correct. If not, I apologize. But thanks so much for joining us. I know it's a little bit later there in Poland than it is here in the States, but we certainly are glad you're here. Why don't you start off and just tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us why you're famous and why you're joining us today.
Well, I'm a Ruby developer and or Ruby on Rails developer basically for the recent 10 years. But recently, I got interested in Hanami Web Framework, and I'm not sure if I am already famous.
But maybe yeah, you're working on it though, right?
You will be after today.
I'm on my way.
Yeah, we'll try.
So basically, I'm in a little bit of a career shift at the moment because recently, as I said, I got very interested in Hanami Web Framework. So I basically changed my life a little bit and changed my career. So I'm basically shifting from Rails to Hanami from commercial point of view at the moment. And yeah, aside of being a Ruby programmer, I'm also karate master, coffee lover, and piano player.
Hey folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs, and lately I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topenddevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv, and I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topenddevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topenddevs.com.
Awesome.
Well, I'm certainly with you on being a coffee lover. I think I'm on about my fifth cup today. So, boy, that's something. Hanami must have obviously had a very strong influence on you, a big impact on you, since it changed the direction of where your focus was. Going from, you know, obviously Rails has a big mindshare, and I think it's probably fair to say Hanami a little less so, but tell us a little bit about what kind of sparked that change. What is it that really got you so interested and motivated using Hanami?
Well, basically, for the recent years, I worked with Rails exclusively as a Ruby developer, because in Ruby community, if you think about it, Ruby is basically Rails. And with my clients, I also work with Rails exclusively. My journey in few recent years was to split a quite big Rails monolith into microservices-based approach to make our applications more scalable, more maintainable, and performant. Yeah, also reliable. But by doing that, we really spent a lot of time to improving our architecture and designing how our app should behave, how it should look like, how our code should be organized for new developers to quickly grasp and join to the company. So if you have like a very big project, you would not need to onboard new developers for the whole project at once, but maybe to some parts and have multiple teams that can be responsible for multiple parts of the system. And while doing that, we started from like a Derive's way big monolith, like a 10 years old project, where we had like a lot of coupled code together. Pretty messy code base, and we really needed to think about how to improve. And we spent like two and a half years gradually optimizing and improving our code base to totally shifting its shape. And after those 2 years when we had like a pretty nice application structure where within RISE, we had very nice and I would say scalable application structure. Then I basically started wondering if other people have the same problem. And it appeared that a lot of RISE developers have problems with structuring the code as soon as the application got quite big. And more importantly, there were a bunch of people who already started working on solutions. And there are plenty of solutions already available, but the one that really really got my attention was basically the Hanami framework, because the people working on this project basically did what we did within our team, but way better. So basically, yeah, it's like the other team that we never thought about and never met them in person had a lot of similar ideas and a lot of similar approaches, even using the same library families and to achieve similar results. But because they created like completely different framework from scratch, they solved a lot of problems that we experienced within RISE that we could not easily go around. And this is when I really got interested in Hanami and tried it out for the first time.
Cool. Now, I just want to call this out because I invited you basically because we were chatting, I think it was on a coaching call, and you mentioned that you were working on Hanami Mastery, which I thought was super cool. And so I just want to let people know, hey, look, you know, we're not just talking to a guy that is interested in Hanami, but you're making videos about it and showing people how to use it, which I think is terrific.
This is a very important thing because I am a lead developer. Currently, still, I am a lead developer in my project. And because we went into microservices and we experienced some problems with RISE, I got a task to actually, because I got interested in Hanami and it was pretty coherent with what we did, I got a task to test it out, to try it out, and to build a service for my client in Hanami and evaluate if this project is ready so we can switch as a whole team. And even I got really excited and the project was extremely surprisingly stable. I decided not to go into Hanami within our team just yet. And there were several reasons behind that. Those key reasons were that the community were relatively small, like pretty small at that moment. And the Hanami was during a complete rewrite state. So it was basically in the development. It was even before the official Hanami 2.0 alpha release. So it was pretty risky from the client point of view without having like a strong community behind the project and without officially released version that the core developers would say it's stable and it's ready to be used. But the other reason I decided to revoke Hanami at that point was the lack of learning resources that were available on the web. And this was, so basically I could use Hanami as a senior developer because I could learn it easily. And also because I was hyped on it, right?
Right.
But my team were not so hyped. I would need to convince them that it's great. And without learning resources where they had in comparison, like crazy amount of Stack Overflow questions, answers related to RISE and documentation and tutorial videos and, you know, everything, it would be like almost impossible for me to switch with the whole team in from RISE to Hanami without losing big chunk of our performance. So all those reasons, basically I said, okay, this project is not ready. So I listed those reasons. I opened a blog, actually a vlog, where I tried to solve all those issues. So basically, Hanami Mastery is my attempt to improve on those points that I saw Hanami is not ready just yet.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. It reminds me a bit of Railscast when it came out. And it was you know, it was pretty early in Rails life cycle, the project itself, its life cycle. And so it was interesting. And I think Ryan initially did it partially to help people like you're talking about, and partially to learn more about Rails. And so anyway, I thought it was really, really terrific. And I think every community kind of needs something like Hanami Mastery or Railscasts or what have you, right? Drifting Ruby. I should mention it since Dave's one of our panelists. But people need something like that out there to help them. Okay, what's out there? What's current? What's going on? How do I actually do this stuff? And yeah, just terrific resources like this. So I'm excited to see this kind of continue and maybe get a little bit more Hanami coverage on Ruby Rogues.
Yeah, I love the approach, because what's the least favorite thing for developers? What do developers always save for last, right? We always wait on writing documentation. And really, that's what you need to give people confidence to use a tool or a framework that you're advocating for. So I love that approach. I mean, personally, I mean, you go look at a new project, if there's not a whole lot written about it, you're going to have more questions. But to have resources like that is great.
Yep.
Yeah. So as Charles, you mentioned Railscast. Yes, I was heavily inspired with that and by that. When I joined to the Rails community, when I learned Rails for the first time, like 10 years ago, Railscast, you know, had answers for everything I needed when I wanted just to write a simple web application. So for junior developers, it was completely crazy. And I hope I will be able to pull together something like that for Hanami project to help junior developers, like lower the entry level of trying Hanami, and maybe just encourage more people to write tutorials and documentation and the video tutorials, screencasts about Hanami. Because as you said, there are great developers in Hanami community working on the Hanami project and any other open source stuff, but without the like core sponsor, when the project is really community driven, it's hard to pull together. Like those developers have their own jobs, daily jobs. They do the open source stuff after hours, having families aside very often, and they have just no time even for coding. And if you think about, you know, pulling together great documentation or learning resources, that's completely beyond their availability. So this is where I come in, basically. Instead of trying to be another Hanami developer, I've identified the points, the parts where the project is in the greatest need, and tried to tackle those.
Another aspect of that is that I've often written documentation or articles about projects, and I'm curious if this happened to you as you were going through putting this content together. Did you realize that, oh, well, maybe it's missing this feature, or maybe, you know, we need to fix a bug or fix or you know, bolster some portion of it? And I think part of the reason is when you're putting that content together, it's part of a larger trend of thinking like a customer of the framework. So when you're writing this, you need to think about, well, what does the engineer who's looking to use this, you're either going to convince them or educate them on how to do something. And so by putting yourself in the customer shoes, you're like, okay, oh, well, in order for me to accomplish XYZ, I'm going to actually need some other function, some other library, whatever the case may be. And so that's always valuable to think about it from the customer perspective. Did you have any kind of similar experience as you were going through this exercise?
Yes, of course. But by preparing those resources, I learned way more than I would be able to just by reading the documentation. Mm-hmm. And the cool part is that I'm helping to build the official Hanami guides for 2.0. So aside of like when I build the research for my episodes, I also do the research for the official documentation chapters. So this is pretty related. And yes, during creation and the research of those episodes, I did discover a few bugs. I did discover like even recently, my next episode was supposed to be about dry types and dry schema. But I wanted to show specific feature that when I tried during creating the script, I realized it's not working properly. So I called the core team and figure out what would be the solution, what would be the correct behavior. So it's not only about the videos I'm publishing, but yeah, I learned way more than I would be able to just by coding. And definitely I encountered the problems that I would never do just by writing some applications. And the big part is that I learned a lot from the community that is growing. So people, because, you know, Hanami Mastery is by its name, people often start to think like, okay, this guy is creating content under the name of Hanami Mastery, so he probably is an expert with Hanami. And I'm trying to solve and answer like all the questions that community gives me, but it's going to be more and more. And basically, it's not about that I am an expert in Hanami right now. I'm trying to be, and I will be probably relatively soon. But definitely, the learning curve where you build a blog of any sort, technical blog, is just super steep. When you learn way faster than just by having regular work.
There's no better way to learn something than by having to explain it to someone else, whether that be verbally or writing it down. That's great. It's great.
So
way.
True. Yeah. And you learn a lot too, just to Sebastian's example there. You learn a ton just by getting in and building it. I mean, it's one thing to go read the documentation or pick up a book or even watch a video course. It's a completely different thing to get in and bang out, like he said, a blog or a Twitter clone or whatever it is that people are building these days.
Well, a few years ago, I released the Udemy course about the Rails API. This is a great example where I was in the process of designing great API for my client. So I built a course about Rails API while doing it and released it. And I got like tons of feedback from people who are really great developers and just bought my course to learn TDD, for example. And they pointed me few big mistakes, architectural mistakes that I said, whoa, that was great idea. I had no idea it was even possible or it was even a thing. And then I just released new version of the course with better modules. So, so it's like, as you said, like when you want to learn something on the very like deep level, the best way is by teaching, I would say.
Yep, absolutely. I want to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk a little more about Hanami itself, just because I know that people periodically will go and look at it or Rhoda or some of the other web frameworks that are out there. We had Jeremy Evans on a month or so ago to talk about Rhoda. But if I'm a Rails developer, which I am, and I'm thinking, oh, this Hanami thing, you know, I keep hearing about it. What is it? How would you explain it to somebody who has familiarity with Rails?
Well, Hanami is a like full stack application Ruby framework. And this is, if you are coming from the Rails world, this is a direct competition to Hanami. This is like a full stack framework. And there is like no other full stack framework in Ruby that. And so if you are a Rails developer, Hanami is basically an alternative. And if you experience by being a Rails developer, if you experience issues when your application grows, Hanami is a framework that basically encourages best developer practices from the very first day of creating application. It's just more natural for new developers when they build applications to build them in the way that it's scalable and less bug. There will be like less bugs within the applications. So, so it's an alternative. I would say it's no shorter explanation. There are a lot of things that are similar. Like, for example, Hanami will have Rails, as Rails have generators for quickly building certain parts of the system, you can build complete web applications within Rails and within Hanami. But the Hanami have like completely different philosophy and just encourages different thinking about programming web applications.
So Yeah, I'm pretty sure that if I remember right, it's like you said, it's Model View Controller. You have the generators. I've played with it, but not for a couple of years. But it uses ROM for its ORM instead of Active Record, which kind of follows a more functional programming pattern. And
if you think about it, Hanami, especially in this 2.0 rewriting version, will glue together three big families of gems. And one is ROM RB for a persistent layer, but also the heavy usage of dry RB libraries and the Hanami components, like views, actions, routing, and so on. And it glues everything together to deliver complete solution for building any kind of application in Ruby. And both ROM RB and dry RB families are pretty functional. If they really encourage functional thinking about programming. And so in Hanami, most of the objects you will work with will be very small, callable objects with one method to communicate with their interface. So you will have not like in Rise, you have like less files, but with multiple methods, you will have more files, more classes, but with very clear interface to communicate with.
Right. What's the testing story like on Hanami?
Could you elaborate a little bit?
So with Rails, if you just kind of do vanilla Rails, you get like, I wanted to say test unit, but it's mini test. That tells you how long it's been since I started using Rails and how sick I am because I can't remember mini test off the top of my head. But it builds it in. The generators generate the tests. I mean, does it test more or less like Rails, or does it, when you write your tests, are you writing them differently there too?
Well, in Hanami, the core Hanami team really encourages the test-driven development for the whole process of creating web applications. So the whole framework is designed in the way that it's easy to be tested. And way bigger part of the system can be tested by unit tests.
Okay.
If you think about the solution, in Hanami 2, the default test engine is RSpec, mostly because it's more convenient for the core developers that got used to it. But other than that, like each part of the system can be tested via unit tests. Of course, you can write integration tests, but it's like way easier to test Hanami from the start. And because Hanami has different approach of loading files and dependencies into your application, when your application grows, your tests are not going to be slower and slower. Let me explain that. In Rise, by default, you load everything everywhere. So it's very convenient to use console. But over time, when the application grows, you need to use solutions like Guard or other like loading engines to keep your application alive in the background. And even with this, over time, just running console and several times per hour or running tests over and over again, it becomes slower and slower where the application grows and there is more code and more dependencies to be loaded. In Hanami, from the other hand, you have always a minimal set of files and dependencies to be loaded to perform a specific task. So when you open the console, it is always pretty instant. And only when you access the file, the class that is required for you to be used, only then it is loaded with all the dependencies that it requires to function properly. And the same applies in tests. So with Hanami, it's really convenient to practice test-driven development because running test examples over and over just does not slow down over time.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Hi, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and in some cases, just taking their career to the next level. You know, whether you're beginner going to intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships, and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topendevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1 hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topendevs.com/coaching.
So you, Sebastian, you've been describing that Anami takes a more functional programming approach. So I'm curious, I guess this is a chicken and an egg question, which came first? So did you already gravitate towards the functional programming approach prior to using Anami? Or did Anami help kind of push you in that direction?
Well, yes and no. In my opinion, functional and object-oriented programming, it's both have their use cases and their needs, and they are very nice when applied to perform specific tasks. When I look at web applications, I, from the high level point of view, I see a request and the response. Like a client sends me a request, so sends me some data, my application processes it and returns me a response. So this can be a pure function. And it is more and more seen this way if you think about the popularity of the serverless approaches, multi-services, mm-hmm. like everything is going into this direction, because web applications are just natural to be built this way. And we in our team, without knowing Hanami, started moving towards functional way of programming web applications like few years ago. And but from this high level approach, like from the processing the requests, handling the request that comes to the controller and serializing it and returning the data. But when we modeled our business layer, the object-oriented programming become more useful, where we needed to check the application state and based on the application state, made certain decisions, then this object-oriented mindset was really useful. So we, in natural way, we basically split apart the application layer from the business domain layer. And when it comes to the application part of the web application, and we went more functional approach. And this is what is natural for me. And this is what I really see in Hanami to be just natural.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to decompose your application into microservices. I think that's a great way to structure your code to get better reuse and, you know, even visibility to where things are going on. I guess on the other hand, you know, monoliths are what they are, but I think they also became quite popular or prolific, I guess, through the use of Rails, because it is fast to develop your initial applications using that approach. So do you see a difference between from that, like in terms of, is there a difference in the learning curve with Hanami, or is it easier, harder to crank out, you know, that Twitter clone or whatever you happen to be building? Is there a difference in terms of the feature velocity and getting started?
Well, at the moment, still Hanami is in the alpha version. So certain features that we got used to in Rise are still missing, are still in the development queue. So this needs to be taken into the consideration. In my Hanami Mastery blog, in my Hanami Mastery project, I already released a playlist, a complete blog, articles with screencast tutorials, how to build like a blog application. So the overhead is not too big, but at the moment there are like missing features like helpers, view helpers, and there is no clear how to do, for example, the authentication logic. I will mm-hmm. release a few screencasts about that very soon. But if you think about the learning curve, it's higher basically because lack of learning resources related to Hanami. So if you want to compare as big Rise community with Hanami that is barely starting, the learning curve will be always higher. And there is no other way around that than more people working together to support each other.
Yep. Well, that was essentially one of the things that made Rails so attractive early on, was that people were not just building, you know, sort of the devices or OmniAuths or whatever, just to give examples on the authentication end. It was also that, yeah, people were doing the other pieces to write blog posts or make videos or things like that, and kind of get people over the hump of, okay, I saw the build a blog post in 2 minutes or whatever it was that DHH did. But yeah, now I need something that is a little more robust. How do I get these other features in? One other thing that's interesting, though, just to throw out there with the authentication piece in particular, is Device, which was written by José Valim initially and then maintained by Platformatech, which is now HeartCombo. They, you know, they've moved a lot of their stuff over to Elixir and Phoenix. And if you go look at the Elixir and Phoenix auth library, what it does is it actually, instead of using a Rails engine like Rails does or something similar in Phoenix, it actually generates all the code to handle all of your authentication in your application. And so it's not even a third-party library, it's just a generator. And so it'll be interesting to me to see if that kind of thing could apply to Hanami or some of these other things out there. I know that Jeremy just wrote Rodoth, which goes on to Rhoda, and some of the other platforms have kind of picked up something similar, right? Where there's some kind of Warden wrapper that goes into Sinatra or something. But yeah, it's always fascinating to me. It's like, hey, we have another chance to solve this problem. Can we do it better than we did in the last system?
Actually, Hanami works pretty well with Rodoth. It's just like there are no up-to-date resources
right,
how to integrate those at the moment. Probably I will be the one that will come with one. But
very cool.
The cool thing about Hanami philosophy is like every single component and every single gem from all those families that I mentioned can be used outside of Hanami if needed. So if you have a big Rails monolith and you only have troubles with your logic placed in views and you would like to improve your view layer, you can take the Hanami view component and inject into Rails and it will work because it's framework agnostic. And this right. is like the philosophy behind Hanami, where they build those components, but they build them in the way it's you are able to integrate with whatever else you need. And this is completely not the case in Rails. Like if you want to replace Active Record with anything else, it's like not possible at all. You can add another ORM, but you cannot remove Active Record, for example. And those kinds of things, I really hope that will inspire Ruby community to write better gems, where you will have, for authentication, for example, you will not have a device that is really coupled to Rails, but you will have more like Rodoth gems where you can plug anywhere you really wish.
Mm-hmm. So I was reading on Hanami Mastery, one of your articles, and also thinking about this. So when one of the advantages of breaking things out into functions is that you can then reuse them in different contexts. And it seems like some of the benefits that Hanami gives you are, you mentioned on there the different or support for multiple architectures. So if I, let's take just a fictional example real quick. If I had a number of services and objects related to cards, like card games, you know, a service to shuffle the deck or deal, then these things work really well when you have a family of related applications within that domain that you want to build. So if I had those foundational services and objects, I could quickly build a blackjack game, a poker game, a Vegas casino. You know, you could imagine from there. So it almost seems like, and I'm curious to get your thoughts, like, is that where some of the sweet spot is for Hanami? And a related question, one of the features that it mentions or concepts to support these different architectures are slices. So obviously if people are familiar with functions and objects, and a lot of our audience probably also familiar with aspects. Slices is a little bit different concept, I think, perhaps, that is maybe a little, at least the terminology, unique to Hanami. So are these families of related applications like some of the target focus for this framework?
Yeah, so about slices, I understand slices as basically namespaces where you put parts of your applications that are self-contained. For example, you can have a separate slice, separate piece of your application related to the client side. Also, you can have separate slice for API, separate for admin or some kind of management, company management or whatever. And each of those slices, even though it is in the place within the same monolithic code base, is completely like independent. It loads only whatever it's required for this specific slice to be loaded. So it is possible to deploy each slice in separate pods of the cloud server, and you have like memory optimized applications that do not load the whole majestic monolith, but only this part. And this is what slices are about. But when you think about I don't think they are designed, or at the moment that the focus is put to make them extracted into separate services or whatever. But I'm pretty sure that the very soon community will come with solutions for that. Or even the developers will put some ideas around this topic. Because yes, collections of functions, collections of specific common behaviors are very useful. And I am myself very curious about how slices will be extractable to services in the near future, and how we will be able, for example, to use them as similar to Rails engines, where you can just mount them as a rack application under the specific URL.
So if I was to try to summarize what you're describing, a slice would be, and it uses the term mini application, but a mini application that's just pulling in the resources that it needs from the larger code base, I guess, monolith, if you will, so that I can grab just what I need and still reuse all of the same code that I have. But I've almost got these mini applications sitting on top of a common code base. Was I even close there? I got a feeling I was off.
Yes. Those mini applications, it's like slices are a Hanami attempt to help people to organize better their code base, because we all hear about majestic monoliths in Ruby, but it's like a unicorn, you know, it's like so freaking rare. You have a majestic monolith that you don't have code coupled, and it's all because people start thinking about organizing the code where the code is all the code base is already huge, and there is never a time to refactor stuff and reorganize files and all that crap. So you need to think about that from the start. And Hanami slices is an attempt to help developers from the first day of creating applications to think about how to organize their code in a structured way and how to keep your applications scalable, not make them scalable after the application grows too much.
Gotcha. Yeah, very cool.
Well, I certainly like it from a marketing perspective. Developers are obviously, we love our soda and pizza. So if it's a reference to pizza slices, I'm in.
I was thinking pie. I need some pie. Oh. Cool. Well, we're kind of getting toward the end of the time that we set aside for the show. I'm curious, just as you continue to build out Hanami Mastery and, you know, work on the, you know, you said you were working on the documentation for Hanami too. What's kind of your plan going forward? Is it just to create more videos? Are you planning on doing a Udemy course like you did for Rails API? Are you looking at maybe some other opportunities to build out some documentation? I mean, where do you go from here?
Well, I am a Ruby developer. I have my family, and I do my blogging stuff in my free time, basically. And I really do want to focus more on this resource creation stuff. But for that, I need to make it more sustainable. Mm-hmm. And so basically, if I will make a Hanami Mastery profitable business, I will be able to focus and put more time on helping the community to grow. So my plans are basically like very, very big, but at the moment I'm focusing on the content creation, and I have like a pretty clear plan when I'm taking the each chapter, each part of the system, each dry RB gem, and I'm doing a tutorial about that. But as my GitHub sponsorship grows, I have more time to put more effort and finance more ideas around that. So one of my next plans is to start the real application, like as a startup, where I will be able to monetize it, but also to open source that stuff. So everybody in the committee will have the way to look at the code and look at the solutions done there and be inspired. So it will be like a real working application. And it will be probably relatively soon when I will start this project. Other than that, I do plan to release the premium ebooks and courses as I did for Udemy. And I'm really looking for more ideas how to keep this project growing and alive, because the more it grows, the more support it gives to the community and the development team.
Cool. Well, I have some things going in the same vein, just not for Hanami. So we should talk and compare notes. In fact, I'll probably talk about that in pics. If people want to connect with you online, where do they find you? Usually people shout out like GitHub, Twitter, LinkedIn, stuff like that.
Well, best to follow the Hanami Mastery Twitter handle, or just visit hanamimastery.com/about. And then like all details, also my personal details are listed there. So I'm available on the web pretty much everywhere. You can list the social media, I'm probably there. So it's not easy to, It's not hard to connect with me, but hanamimastery.com is definitely the easiest way that I can recommend.
Awesome.
Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
All right, well, let's go ahead and do some picks. Sorry, I kind of took over, Darren.
Go with it. You're on a roll, man.
I'm on a roll at something. But anyway, why don't you give us some picks?
Sounds good. So I've really gotten into working with native Ruby applications, really in particular games recently. And so I've been starting out working a lot with Gosu library. So one of my picks is a book by Tomas Florenegas, which is about building games with Ruby. And it's got great coverage over just the whole process from tiles all the way down to like AI for the different aspects of the enemies or part of the game. So excellent book. So it's available to read online. You can also buy a physical print copy if you like. And then as an extension of that, I started, I'm like, well, let me also give Dragon Ruby a try. And so I'm just a little bit into that journey right now. It's very interesting to compare the two. I love the hot loading. I love the ability to obviously publish to multiple platforms. It's one of its hugest benefits. I do miss not being able to pull in, you know, typical Ruby gems that you might normally like to use. So that is a little bit of a drawback, but you know, it's a trade-off that you have to make. It does have a great community on Discord. So a lot of people that are doing a lot of interesting things with it. So hopefully in the future, I'll have some interesting projects to share with you all, but that's kind of where my interests have been. It's pretty cool stuff, and it's a nice diversion every once in a while to kind of dive into little games. And you know, I also build little productivity applications that I use myself, and maybe if some of them kind of bubble up, seem useful enough, I'll turn them into projects as well. But those are cool. My picks for this week.
I'm going to throw out a few picks now. This show had beer picks forever with Avdi, and I don't drink, so I'm going to start doing picks on board games. And James Gray used to do this periodically. He'd pick like five of them. I think I'm just going to pick one every week, and y'all can go check them out. The one that I've been picking on all the shows that we recorded this week is Viscounts of the West Kingdom, which is kind of a deck building / worker management game. If you kind of follow the the kind of the classifications on board games. So there are several ways to win. There are several strategies you can follow to do really, really interesting things in order to pull things together. And I've really, really enjoyed that. So you can go check it out. Viscounts is spelled with an S, V-I-S-C-O-U-N-T-S. And I'll put a link in the show notes so that we can get that shared. But that's my board game pick. And then, yeah, so the other thing that I kind of hinted I'd pick on the show is I am working on pulling together resources for developers at topendevs.com. I finally got things working with DigitalOcean's app platform to get it deployed, because I really like not doing DevOps and just pushing to Git and having it magically appear. But they're using Heroku's Ruby kit that they use on their stuff. And for whatever reason, it was giving me funky errors with Bootstrap and stuff like that. And their support told me to do a couple of things that didn't work. Turns out, I'll just throw this one out there. If you're using Bundler 2.2, the gem file lock that it generates isn't compatible. So I had to roll back to Ruby Gems 2.1, and then it was fine. It worked fine. And I don't remember how exactly I figured that out, but there really wasn't a whole lot of help out there. So if you're trying to deploy to app platform and you have a newer Rails app or Ruby app, just be aware that Bootstrap and Ruby Gems 2.2.30 or Bundler 2.2.30 are not friends. But
sounds know, like there right? needs to
well,
be a
and that, that leads to the other thing that I'm picking is I'm putting together courses. So I want to have something that's a series that's ongoing, kind of like Drifting Ruby or Hanami Mastery for some of the topics we cover. Hanami's really not been on my radar, but you know, maybe Sebastian and I can talk. And we figure out how to get him some money for what he's doing. But I'm planning on at least initially putting together more career development resources. So how to stay current, how to learn things, how to find resources, how to, you know, do all of that kind of a thing, how to network with people. And then, yeah, I'd like to get some more technologically focused series up as well. But it's not just series. I also really loved back in the day Peep Code, where they had like the 1 hour video that just walked you through something. And so I'd like to put a bunch of that up there. And then I do think there is a place for kind of the 6 hour or 10 hour or whatever course, but that's kind of that's going to be a focus later on. I plan on releasing some of those, and I'll have a schedule up on topendevs.com here within the next few days. But yeah, if you want to come sign up, I'm running a pre-launch special that's also the Black Friday deal. So after Cyber Monday, you'll have to pay full price in order to get in. And as you sign up, then you'll get invited to some of the masterclasses I'm doing leading in, and some of the other resources that I'm putting together as I put them out. So yeah, definitely come check it out. That'll be at topendevs.com. If you want to author a course, you can go to topendevs.com/author. And yeah, you can check all that out. The other thing that I've been doing lately is coaching people who want to build a media channel. I feel like to a certain degree, yeah, they're, you know, it's competitors competition, but for the most part, people I find will sign up for a couple of different kinds of resources depending on what they're doing. And so I want to help just put as much stuff out there on the web as possible to help people move their career forward, you know, whether it's about technical skills or people skills or something else. So if you're looking at, you know, building that up or building it up so you can go freelance, it seems like that's what I keep getting people coming to me lately for is, you know, how do I get people to find me when I'm freelance? And, you know, a media channel is a terrific way to do that. But anyway, you can go to topendevs.com/coaching and just, it's a really simple form. You just fill it in and then I'll get on a call with you. And I actually do the first couple of coaching calls for free. So I'll do the first coaching call. If I think I can help you, then we'll do another coaching call. And then after that, if it's a good fit, then I'll actually make a proposal and, you know, and say, hey, this is how I think I can help you. This is, you know, how we can speed up your process, and we'll talk about what it'll cost and how it'll work. So that's kind of how that works. I'm not really hiding the ball on any of that. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody how it all comes together. And if I don't think I can help you, then I'm not going to try and convince you to pay me, because I think I've seen people do that. And I think it's wrong. If you think you can help somebody, great. If you don't think you can help somebody, then do the best you can and then give them whatever resources you can find. So anyway, those are my picks. I got a little long-winded, but that's kind of where I'm heading going into things moving forward. So anyway, Sebastian, what are your picks?
Oh, I didn't prepare anything particular, but I recently bought Jeremy Evans' book, The Polished Ruby Programming.
Uh-huh.
And I got really excited about it because the very first chapter I opened was really useful for me, and I learned few stuff. When I, as a senior Ruby developer, you know, open a book that is not targeted particularly to seniors, and I learned something new from the very first pages, I already know that this is a great book. So I didn't finish it yet, but I will do my review pretty soon. So this is one of the picks I have at the moment. And other than that, I am so hyped and focused about creating the Hanami Mastery content that can, you know, you can ask basically any dry related gem, and I will know a bit about that because I'm doing heavy research about all those libraries. And it's like over a hundred gems that I need to cover. So this is a lot of work. And one of my recent discoveries was dry effects that I will publish an episode about that. This is about using algebraic effects in Ruby. And this is pretty crazy. Not so easy to grasp for people that come from object-oriented programming. So it's extremely interesting, and it solves really, really popular, very common issues that we all have, like testing classes that dependent on the current time, using time now, for example. And there are like crazy things that we can do with them, like continuous error handling and so on. So I'm still exploring that stuff, but it's pretty bonkers. I really love it. And so those are my picks I can share.
Awesome. All right. Well, this was a lot of fun. Let's go ahead and wrap it up here. Thanks again for coming. This was terrific. And Hanami is fascinating.
Yeah, this was great. Definitely encourage all of our listeners to check out HanamiMastery.com. Yep. We'll have the link in the show notes. Good stuff.
All right. Thank you, guys. Yeah. All right, folks. Till next time, Max out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.